Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do the review stick up here on the podcast feed, except this time I'm a little bit out of order because I've already finished a book called The Raven Stratagem by Yoon-Ha Lee, and I was going to review it with Juliana, and she's here with me. Hello.
Hello.
We're not reviewing this today because you've not finished the book.
Not really.
And you could be reading it, but you're much more excited or much more into reading the Neil Gaiman comic. Sandman.
Yeah. So the thing is, it's just sometimes a bit easier to just get everything in picture there right in front of you.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in the future. But Raven Stratagem, do you think you're going to finish it? Are you going to get through it, or is it not really grabbing you?
Yeah, I will get through it.
Okay, well, we'll hold off on the review for that one. So today, in fact, I'm going to be reviewing... Thanks, Juliana. I'm going to be reviewing a book called The Children of Time by Adrian... Oh, well, let's have a look at the name. Adrian Tchaikovsky. And Adrian Tchaikovsky is a British author, and this book was recommended to me on the SFBRP listener group last year. He says, I'm also a big fan of Adrian Tchaikovsky's Children of Time, Far Future, Terraforming, Bioforming, Nanotech, Generation Cold Storage Ships, etc. It's criminally underappreciated. Lindsay said that last year, and then this year said, just giving another boost for this book as well, I can't call it underappreciated anymore, as it won the Arthur C. Clarke Award for Best Novel last year. And the Arthur C. Clarke Award is British science fiction, or not British science fiction published in Britain. But it seems to have a little bit of a slant towards more British writers, I guess, because they publish more in the UK than elsewhere. Anyway, so I thought I'd give this book a go, and normally I do the wrap up, the bits and pieces. So it's hardcover, 600 pages hardcover, published June 4th, 2015. So it's a few years old, so I guess, yeah, the Arthur C. Clarke Award is for a book that was published the previous year. So 2016 Arthur C. Clarke Award goes to a book that was first published in 2015, and I read it here in 2017. It's not in a series yet. I guess the end opened up that there could be more stories, but I don't think there needs to be any more stories. It's a pretty good wrap-up at the end of this. So, standalone novel, science fiction stuff. So, to get into this, I want to just read a little bit, because I said as soon as I finished this book, I was like, this book reminds me of two other books just smashed together. And I said to Juliana, it would be a real surprise to me if other people didn't immediately pick up on these two parallels. So if you've read these other two books, you'll know exactly what you're going to get from Children of Time. And Rick, on Goodreads, he actually said, let's find the thing here. Rick said, far-flung science fiction like you've never read or listened to before. And again, I have to completely disagree with that because, oh boy, does this book feel very, very, very familiar to me. And somebody else, Ryan, mentioned it right here in his review. He actually posted his review just yesterday, and it was quite funny. As I was posting that I had finished reading this book on Goodreads, I saw his right next to mine, his review right in my feed as I was saying I'd finished this. And he said, oh no, I've lost the bit here. He says, I'd note that there's a lot of similarity in concept to Verne Vinge's A Deepness in the Sky, which also features humans stranded in space dependent on a developing world of sentient spiders. But for my money, this was the more streamlined, well-thought-out novel. So that's what Ryan said about it. And that is very true. This is a book about sentient spiders and humans stranded in space, dependent on a world of sentient spiders to kind of get up to technological speed to kind of save them or whatever as well. However, I thought this book has actually got it's very, very similar to that, but there's another book which is very, very similar to it, even in fact more similar to in terms of structure. And I scrolled down the page and none of my friends' reviews pointed this out, but the top listed non-friend review, like for non-SFBRP listeners, says, this is Brad, his review says, I was reminded every step of the way of John Brunner's The Crucible of Time, with the bringing up of an alien society from its primitive roots to space exploration. And that's the book which this hit me, that this book reminded me of very, very much so. And I reviewed The Children of Time actually on this podcast, and I will now look up the episode list. If you go to sfbrp.com /episode-lists, you can actually get to a list of all of this. So if I just quickly search for Crucible, back on episode 22, Crucible of Time, back in 2008, I read this book by John Brunner. And that was a book about a civilization of, it's like an alien planet, and this civilization looks out into space and says, oh, all our stars are moving, our star is moving through space and our planet is moving with the star, but it's going to go into this massive dust cloud, this big nebula, a few, you know, what is it, like 500,000 years or however many thousands of years in the future, our star is going to get swallowed up by a dust cloud. So for us to survive, we're going to have to be able to fly into outer space and head away from our star, and that's going to be what we do. And so that book tells the story. Like, it's lots of short stories, like every chapter or every few chapters, every new section is set a few generations later or thousands of years later or hundreds of years later, and tells of like the next step in the development of their society, the development of their technology, the development of their biology, and all those different kind of things. And we have something very similar to this in The Children of Time. And it's even closer to the naming of this, because we've got The Crucible of Time by Jordan Brunner, and this is The Children of Time. And another book by Werner Vinge is called Children of the Sky, which is like a follow-up book to Fire Upon the Deep and The Deepness in the Sky. So we've actually got, like, this book is even named after two books or two authors' books whose books this reminds me of very much so. So yeah, if you already know and liked Children of the Crucible of Time and A Deepness in the Sky, put those books together and that's what you get in this book. And I could kind of just leave it there, but of course I'm going to go into more details. But I really enjoyed The Crucible of Time. I think I rated it 4 stars. Deepness in the Sky, I've not read and reviewed for this podcast. I will get to it, I'm sure, in the future. But again, I really enjoyed that book too, and you put them together in this book, while it felt like one of the most familiar books to me, like this was breaking no new ground for me, nothing happened in this book at all, which I haven't read elsewhere, except for maybe some little bits and pieces at the end, which, to be honest, some of the weaker parts at the end, but I did enjoy it. Some bits at the end were new to me, but generally all the way through it felt really, really familiar, to the point that in the book The Crucible of Time, there's a section where sometimes, you know, as they go through this, the evolution, their species evolve or the society evolves through different, different society kind of things. And sometimes the females are more important and sometimes the males are more important. And as it switches between the two, you even get those story beats or some of the same scenes and the same ideas that are put there, in that book just come straight through here. And also some of the main sequences and main plot points that are in A Deepness of the Sky by Werner Vinge, also in this book as well. Again, I don't want to go too much into what some of those are because, spoiler territory, but it felt like, again, very, very familiar. However, I did really enjoy this book. It was, you know, a great audiobook. I listened to it, and after some other books that I've read recently where I'm just like, I'm not really into this, it's not really grabbing me, this one, I always wanted to go back to it, and I always wanted to know what happens next. So I would say this has got a glowing recommendation for me. It could have been, I think if I hadn't read Deepness in the Sky and I hadn't read Crucible of Time, this could also almost be like a, you know, like a perfect book, like a 4.5 stars, 5-star kind of book for me. But because it did seem to be a bit derivative and seems to be a bit knowing about its influences and about its sort of like, well, this has been done before. You know, this stuff has very clearly been done before, but this is like a fun exploration of kind of what's been done before, but in a modern way. And I really enjoyed it. There are things that happen in this book which I've not read before, but not a lot of it. So I'd give this book 4 stars. Anyway, let's get on to some of the other bits and pieces about this book. The setup is Avrana Kern is a spaceship captain. She's in charge of a terraforming mission to a planet that she, in her head, calls Kern's World. This is right in the first, like, in the prologue opening chapter, so no spoilers here. But what happens is that in Kern's World, there is a There's lots of animals down there, small animals, but generally they've made it so it's terraformed that humans could live there, but this is an experimental world. This isn't for humans yet. What the plan is that they're going to drop down a barrel of monkeys. Literally, they call them a barrel of monkeys. So we're going to drop down some monkeys and they're going to land on the planet, but also we're going to infect the infect the monkeys with a virus which kind of accelerates their evolution and puts in place a cooperative gene where when they meet each other they don't want to wipe each other out. There's not going to be any war. They're going to be very kind to each other, and this virus is going to kind of speed up in some ways some evolution, and in other ways, you know, calm down some other things, sort of like say the violence and the other bits and pieces, and try and make them good, good things. And once they're uplifted, once these monkeys have been uplifted, they will get their technology up to a level that they can hear a radio signal from outer space, and then, you know, do the mathematical equations correctly and broadcast the answers back into space again, and that will then stop the virus. Or they'll introduce another virus which will stop that virus, and they'll stop evolving, and then there'll be like a co-species for humans to come and work with. And, you know, it's sort of like, oh, that's really nice. But it seems to be like, yeah, we want a race of non-human slaves that we can have developing a planet and looking after us once we get down there as humans and things. So that's the plan. Unfortunately, a few things do go wrong, and the monkeys don't make it. And so instead, this virus, the virus infects a spider or a species of spider. And so then that spider gets uplifted. Accidentally, they uplift spiders instead of monkeys. And Verana Kern stays in stasis, stays in the freezing, and comes back out and checks on the monkeys, what she thinks down there are monkeys, now and then. And so that's one thread of the stories. We follow the different stories of the spiders as they start evolving and as they work through. And one thing that I really enjoyed about this is that each time that they were introduced, sort of like, okay, here's another generation of spiders and we're going to follow the stories, Adrian Tchaikovsky does this fantastic thing where he gives them the same names each time. So there's like this repeating, recurring cast. There's Portia, which is always like one of the main ones, and Bianca and Fabian, and they do have different roles. Sometimes Fabian is the most important one, sometimes Bianca is the most important one, sometimes Portia is the most important spider, and it's kind of like sometimes they're priests, and sometimes they're scientists, and sometimes they're hunters, and sometimes they're soldiers. But we always get sort of like a little short story featuring these spiders, and they feel very similar because we don't need to get to know the spiders each time. Even though they are different spiders, hundreds of years apart or 1,000 years apart or generations apart, it doesn't really matter because we have these ways into their personalities and characters, just saying, oh, this is another Portia, this is another Bianca. We don't need to worry too much about it. Let's just get into what they are doing now and where the society is and where the science and technology is at this point. So I really appreciated not having to learn a new set of spider names for each new set of spiders that we have a story with, which is really great. There is one thing about the naming, though, which I thought was a little bit on the nose, was there's an ark ship from Earth, and the ark ship is called the Gilgamesh, and I was like, okay, that's a little bit on the nose. But there's also the ship which is there to do this uplift project is called the Bryn, and it's never mentioned that the Bryn is named after Bryn, who invented the term, or came up with the term and popularized the term uplift for making a species less intelligent than you, making them more intelligent and getting them up to the same level of intelligence as you. You know, uplift has now become just part of just kind of the vocabulary of modern science fiction. Oh, uplift. We get apes and make them more intelligent. We get spiders and make them more intelligent. We get dolphins and make them more intelligent. Uplift. But to call the spaceship in this science fiction, call it the Bryn, it feels like, it just makes me think this is fiction, and it's not mentioned that much. It's kind of set up, and there are kind of quite a few knowing nods to other science fiction in the past, but to call a spaceship which is doing an uplift scientific project the Bryn, it could have been named a bit better for it to not feel so jokey. So the other, the Gilgamesh is someone else who travels through time. There's someone called Holden who is a historian on an ark ship, the Gilgamesh, coming from Earth, and they get to the spider planet and are like, hey, we should settle here. Oh no, shit, not here. And then they fly off and they're going to come back at the end again. And he is also someone unstuck in time in a way that he keeps going into cold sleep, and anything interesting happens, he's kind of woken up, sometimes to be part of the crew, sometimes to help translate old English things, because they're using a different language now, but he can still understand old English and understand old technology, or be able to work with manuals and things. And it also, when things are happening which seem interesting, because he's like the last remaining historian on the spaceship, and as actually part of human race as well, he's often brought in and say, okay, you're just going to be here because we just need someone to keep track of what's going on and to record it and stuff. So he's called a classicist, in the same way that we look back now, you know, Greek stuff and Roman stuff, and you're not like a historian. Oh, you are a historian, but it's more you're a historian of the literature of the time and the spoken word of the times. So you're a classicist, and that's what he is, but pretty much a historian trying to work out different old languages and alien languages. So that's Holden, and he's the character that we kind of see everything from on the Gilgamesh from the human point of view. There are a few other point of view characters, but only now and then, as we kind of, like, he's stuck inside and we need to go outside the ship, so we follow some other people. There's the captain of that ship is, generally this is a book about power going wrong as well, like all the captains are a little bit crazy. And in fact, one of them, it says, oh no, we know he's a bit crazy, but he's really good at long-term planning. And the idea that you can get someone who's very good at long-term planning is kind of like a deal with the devil. Sure, they're good at long-term planning, and they'll be able to put things into place. However, along the way, you know, do the ends justify the means and all that kind of stuff? And we have that actually with Avran Akern, and I can't remember the name of the captain of the Gilgamesh, but we have it seem to be twice over, that these long-term planners, they're put in place. They get a very good test score for long-term planning, and that's why they're put in place. And on the other side, we see the similar kind of thing with the spiders that are very much, again, like The Crucible of Time by John Brunner, where you've got these people like, oh, in the future, we need to get to this point. And in the future, you know, our sun is going to go into a gas cloud and we need to become a spacefaring species, a spacefaring civilization. And in this, the spiders that we follow, which is the Portia, is it Portia? Portia? I'm not quite sure how you spell it. But it's a breed of spider which kind of looks at something and then is known for being able to plan into the future. So the first scene that we have with the spiders is a spider looking at another insect, like a fly or an ant, and going, oh, okay. Oh, no, it's actually looking at another spider. That's it. Okay, so it's a spider that hunts other spiders and does it by looking at something and then is able to plan a big route through the trees. Oh, I'm going to climb up this way, round this way, over here, swing across there, down there, and then I'm going to drop down from above it and dig in my fangs, and there I'll be able to do the thing. So the whole idea that the uplift virus targets a species which is actually known for long-term planning makes a lot of sense, and I really enjoyed how it plays off between each other, sort of like a whole species which is revolved around long-term planning, and how it works really well in the spiders, but in the humans, maybe not a good fit. So, yep, Holden and Lane is a technician and Cast is a security guy, and I can't really remember the other names. To be honest, the humans in this book, not really the best characters, not really the most interesting characters. I enjoyed spending time with them, but there wasn't really a whole lot there for me to sink your teeth into, to get your fangs into as interesting characters. What I mostly enjoyed about this book, or what I enjoyed more about this book, is the other spiders and seeing how their, you know, biological technology expands and how they get on with the other species. Like, there's an invasion of ants at one point, and the ants have also been uplifted, but they haven't been uplifted on an individual basis like the spiders. They've been uplifted on a ant hive basis, so the hive itself has been uplifted to kind of be able to work and plan long time, but it's not conscious. Some really good stuff in the book about that too. So yeah, what else do I have to say about this book? I listened to it as an audiobook. Let me have a quick look here on audible.com. It's narrated by Mel Hudson, and I really enjoyed Mel Hudson's narration. She has some interesting accents, that's all I can say. I was never really quite sure where some of these human characters were meant to be from. One of them definitely seemed to be much more New Zealandish, but then I was like, it doesn't really sound like quite New Zealand. Maybe it's kind of a bit Australian mixed with New Zealand or whatever. And then there's another character. I was like, are they from the West Country or are they Irish or something? I was often not quite sure where the characters were meant to be from. However, I could always tell them apart just from their accent, which was very helpful. Considering previous audiobooks that I've listened to have been a bit difficult where, like, two people can be having a conversation. It's sort of like just, oh, okay, you're just using the same voice for both of them, and I can... What book did I listen to recently, which is a bit too much like that? I can't remember. But this book is good that the accents, you can tell apart the characters, even if the accents aren't exactly right. But then, again, this book is set in the future with people who aren't even speaking English. And so I guess the accents don't need to be perfect. They can just be differentiable between each other. So if you want to check out this audiobook, I really do recommend it. It's a really great length of an audiobook. 16 hours and 30 minutes, published by Audible Studios. So they obviously thought, hey, this book is definitely worth publishing as an audiobook. And I do think it is. I wouldn't have probably read it if it wasn't available as an audiobook. But you can check this out if you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. You can get this book for free and also help support the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. You get the book for free if you sign up for a plan or even just do a test of one of these plans. I have the Platinum plan, which gives me 2 credits per month. I've actually got a few credits left over at the moment, but I'm working my way through them. We can get the Gold plan, which is 1 credit per month. I think that's what they call them now, I'm not sure. And you can get 180,000 audiobooks, any single one of them for free if you sign up for that plan. And that also helps out the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. So check it out, audibletrial.com/SFBRP. I'm not really sure I have anything else to say about this book. I really enjoyed the writing style. There was some interesting bits. Again, there is one thing that I want to say. What I really enjoyed about this book is that some of the main characters, or put it this way, Evrana Kern, we meet her in the first chapter, and she is totally unlikable. She's like, full of herself. She's straight away. It's like, oh, I think of this book as Kern's world, and because I'm Evrana Kern, and I think this planet should be named after me, and totally. Total megalomaniac, and is so into herself. What I really enjoyed about that is when she evolves as a character. She doesn't evolve into a more likable character, but what she goes through as a character, again, I don't want to give too much away, but she has to last for thousands of years in space watching down at her planet. And I just want to say, I really enjoyed that. I think that was one of the sections where that was the part which I really felt like it was doing something new, this book. In a way, again, the way that story was resolved is something that I've seen many times before in science fiction, but just the journey along the way with that character. There's some lines which really stuck with me, sort of like saying, oh, her capacity for overlooking her own flaws or overlooking things that she didn't like was like, it was an unbounded capacity for messing things up and overlooking facts that she doesn't want to do. As her brain changes, as she starts, you know, augmenting herself and as she exists throughout time and things like that, it's just I thought some of the ways of sort of like, and it's not done always in your face. It's not like, and then she did this and then she did this. It's just sort of like the way that she was interacting and the way that we were seeing her thoughts and the radio messages with her. You're like, oh wow, this is a really messed up brain. Why can't she see what's going on? Why can't she see what's going on? And it turns out, yeah, if you want to last for thousands of years, thousands of spider generations, as these spiders have this fast forwarded evolution, it doesn't matter how fast forward their evolution is, it still takes a long time to get through it. And if one person's going to survive that long, it's going to do weird stuff to the brain. Just to keep sentient, just to keep the memories intact throughout that time, is going to do weird stuff to the brain. And I really enjoyed reading the weird stuff that happens to Evrana Kern's brain. And so I think of all the characters in this book, it'll probably be that one of, like, the first viewpoint character who you really don't like at the start of the book, for good reason and purposefully not liking her. But that character is probably the one that's going to stick with me throughout. So that's the last of my notes. I think that'll do. You can... 4 stars for this book. Again, could have been 5 stars if it had been more... Maybe if I hadn't read the other books or if this had been more... more original. There'd been a bit more original stuff in it I've not seen before. But it wasn't very original. But it was still good fun. So 4 stars. So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. You can become my friends on goodreads.com. And it's really great if you read a book and I read the same book. I can also see what books you're reading as well. Like Ryan, who I mentioned just before, who finished this book at the same time as me, on the same day as me. He said, Ryan says, I've listened to your podcast for years. I think this is the first time we've ever been in sync on a book. Look forward to your review. So it's really great that I can see other people's reviews of the same book. Like Lindsay rated it 5 stars, Jay rated it 5 stars, Carl X 5 stars, Tudor 5 stars, Mikhail Kodony, 4 stars. Rick, 5 stars. Yeah, lots of people rating this book 4 and 5 stars because I think it is a good book. You have to be like really. J.M. Oriol rated it 3 stars. I guess you could rate this book 3 stars, but you'd have to be really, really picky to rate this book anything less than 3 stars because it's just there's just not a lot wrong with it at all. So I totally understand why it won awards. I totally understand why it's got such a high rating on Goodreads, 4.3 stars, which is a really good rating after 7,184. So I guess if you aim for a not very original and well-worn themes, but just do a really, really good job of it. And like Ryan said, I do think this novel is probably actually slightly better in many ways than the books which it is based on. I think it is a better book than The Crucible of Time, and I think it's probably a better book in some ways than A Deepness in the Sky, which is kind of a bit overblown and full of itself and a bit too epic, and this kind of just concentrates down onto some of the smaller stories. So And some of the twists at the end are actually better done, I think, than A Deepness in the Sky, too. So you can also follow me on Instagram. I'm Luke Burridge there. And also on YouTube, you can check out my vlogging and juggling stuff and travel vlogs and videos and all the nerdy stuff that I do with to do with juggling with Juliana as well. You can check that out on YouTube. I'm Luke Burridge there, too. Email me, luke@juggler.net. I reply to every single email that I receive. I guess that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.